just give it some time, you know. How much time? I don't know.
Right.
I was not, certainly wasn't guessing that within a month we would be back to, or very close to back to, not just where we started April. Okay, that was enough of a move. Mm-hmm. But we're ever closer to the last all-time high on the S&P 500 back in the middle of February, which is not ancient history, but just a tremendous rally here as the trade issues have, you know, we can't say they're all fully settled at this point. It appears we've gotten to the new normal for the time being.
They're papering now.
There you go.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that. Paper the agreements.
Yeah. But you know, it's another lesson, Eric, in trying to time the market, trying to figure out what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
People aren't good at that. Nobody's good at that.
Nobody's good at it. And we are going to share some data with you a bit later in the show on what bear markets and corrections traditionally have looked like over time in terms of the amount of time it takes to get from the peak to the trough and then go back from the trough to recapture the last all-time high. I don't know that this present correction is going to be a typical one from that standpoint, at least from where we sit today. Great analysis from Stifel's chief Washington policy analyst on the latest news on the China tariff pause. We'll update you on what that is and what it means, as well as lots of news out of Washington, D.C. this week regarding taxes and reform bill.
Didn't mean to interrupt you there. So the one that troubles me a little bit, the China deal.
Yeah.
I could see things going sideways.
Just because we're in a more comfortable position today doesn't mean that's going to last even a week.
That's right.
Look at what the last couple weeks has brought.
Look how quickly things happen.
Yeah. So we'll update you on that as well as some of the latest economic data. We do have quite a bit to discuss today regarding Social Security, a projection for what your cost of living adjustment is shaping up to look like for next year with Social Security, as well as important things that you need to know before you claim. Good article out of Kiplinger that covers some of that. And then as we round the show here, we're also going to update you on the latest state of the automotive market. No, it's not about tariffs, although that's still happening and impacting vehicle prices and things like that. But this is really focused on what the state of auto loans are these days. Just jaw-dropping, at least in my seat, what is now considered normal in a lot of cases. We don't want you as a listener to consider it normal, but we're going to update you on that a bit later in the show. Let's jump into some of the latest economic data first. We did get an update on retail sales. The tariffs as well as trade issues did influence retail sales, which rose just 0.1% for the month of April, according to the government's release on Thursday of this week. That was in line with expectations, but also a pretty significant pullback from the 1.7% spike we saw in March. Now, granted, that 1.7% spike was well above expectations, and it was suggested at the time that a lot of consumers were trying to get ahead of the tariffs. That appears to have been the case as we had a much more mild retail sales figure for April. We also had an update on industrial production, which was flat in April, according to the Federal Reserve. That is the second straight week report as uncertainty stemming from tariffs, it's going to be a theme here, continues to impact imported goods. That did miss the consensus forecast for a 0.1% rise. So not a huge miss, but a modest miss on expectations for industrial output. Then we got to the more important data this week was regarding inflation. Tuesday, we saw the latest update to the Consumer Price Index, which increased 0.2% for April, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That gives you an annual rate for headline CPI dropping to 2.3% for an annual headline inflation number, getting ever closer.
That's pretty
to
good.
That 2% target. That's down from 2.4% in March. When we look at core CPI, which excludes food and energy prices, core CPI also rose 0.2% in April, less than expected. And then core CPI is currently annual stabilizing at a 2.8% rate. That's also been coming down. That was generally good news, and I think a positive surprise, helping ballast and bolster markets here. Then we got Thursday's wholesale inflation report. This is the producer price index, which leads consumer prices by several months. And boy, was it a surprise in a good way. We expected to see about a 0.2% increase in producer prices for the month of April, and we actually had a negative 0.5% PPI increase, or decrease rather, for the month of April. That brings the rate of wholesale inflation over the last year all the way down to 2.4% from 3.4% in the prior month. That's a big move over a single month for PPI.
It's moving in the right direction, and you just have to wonder, what is the Fed, what's their next move? Because we're getting into that zone where it probably wouldn't hurt to cut rates.
Yeah.
You know,
let's go to that next, and we've got some comments from Fed Chair Powell on this latest inflation data as well. Just before we get away from the producer price index, the core PPI reading, which excludes food and energy as well as retail trade margins, also fell 0.1%, which was below expectations. Fed Chair Powell did have some comments for that on Thursday. Powell said, "We may be entering a period of more frequent and potentially persistent supply shocks, a difficult challenge for the economy and for central banks." Powell also noted that the Fed's focus is shifting back to inflation as its primary issue and concern. I think that's probably good news in light of the latest inflation data. But it didn't make a big difference in the futures markets predictions for when we're going to see the next Fed rate cut.
Let me guess, never?
It's not looking like never, but it's not looking like June. Just 1 month ago, we talked about it here on the show just 1 month ago, which this is also a good example of how volatile these futures markets are. You can't hang your hat on these probabilities of when a rate cut's going to happen. If you rewind the clock back to April 15th, you had a 70, almost 73% probability that the Fed would have at least one rate cut in at the June meeting. As we are on air today, that probability has fallen to 8.2%. So we went from 73% to 8.2%.
That may be the biggest one I've ever seen.
Granted, there's been a lot of changes over the course of the last month. We were in a very different place. Even when you get out to the July 30th meeting for the Fed, you're still looking at less than a 42% probability of a rate cut in July, according to futures markets today, all, of course, very much subject to change. You have to get all the way out to the September meeting before you see the probability of a rate cut higher than 50%, and it's considerably higher. By the time you get out to February's futures, you're looking at just a 26% probability the Fed will have rates at the present level, and then about a 74% probability that they'll have some level of one or more rate cuts in at that
time.
Yeah,
for what that's worth.
Yeah.
That's a long ways away.
It is. And you remember, we've come full circle here with Fed rate cuts. If at the start of the year, the Fed had lowered expectations to only suggesting maybe two cuts this year. Then we had all of the tariff issues come up. And for a time there, futures markets and even some Fed FOMC members were saying you could have 4 to 5 rate cuts this year. We are now back to the 2 to 3 range is what things are shaping up. So we'll see.
Eric, what do they use this information for? What does this information tell us? If it's always wrong, what good is it? What do you do
with
it?
It's not always wrong. Eventually, it's pretty close to right. Like when you get to the week before the Fed meeting, it's usually pretty
I mean,
pretty
why do they spend the time and money trying to – who uses it? That's what I want to know. Who uses this data?
The futures
economists?
Data? Economists? Yeah, economists certainly use it. I'll tell you, it's very important to bond traders.
Wrong. If I was a bond trader, I'd –
Well, I mean, listen, it's not always wrong, but we've been in a spectacular time for major changes to the Fed. You know, usually, Fed policy is more stable than it has been
I think we're in a new period. I think we're in a new period where stability has gone out the window for a while.
With regard to interest rates.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. You've got futures markets for everything, not just interest rates, not just bond prices, things like that.
Sure.
And it's the best information that we have available to assess what the market is suggesting is coming. That's not a perfect prediction, but it is
it's all they got.
It's the best we got to deal with.
It's what we have.
And it does have implications for, people earlier in the year probably were putting together plans if you were expecting these rates to fall sooner than they have. Mm-hmm. When you're going to deploy capital, when you're going to deploy cash. If you're getting 4-ish% on a money market fund with minimal risk at best, some investors who are more conservative aren't really trying to get more than that. If you're okay with that and you just don't want to have to think about it, well, once you start only getting 2.5% on your cash or 3% on your cash, you start thinking about doing other things with it.
You can see that at your bank, right? I mean, you can see that at your brokerage office. What are rates?
Yeah, but if you wait until the forecasting is always wrong.
On the Money, brought to you by the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel.
Welcome back. This is On the Money. I'm Bob Stockdale, along with Eric Robert. We're part of the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel. That includes Mark Reardon and Jason Becker, both Senior Vice Presidents of Investments with Stifel also. And we want to give you an opportunity to come sit down with us. We would love to meet you, find out what you're doing with your investments, find out what your issues are as far as retiring, investing, things aren't going your way, maybe we can help. Give us a call. The number is
636-695-2650, or you can go to clearpathinvesting.com. Stifel's Chief Washington Policy Strategist, Brian Gardner. If you're a client, you get our emails periodically when we send out updates from some of our best thought leadership at Stifel, and Brian's certainly up there. He was actually at our national conference, which we held this past week. We call Blueprint, Stifel Blueprint, and Brian spoke, and a number of the points that he was making at the conference just got released a couple days later this past week, which were sent out to our clients. Speaking
good stuff.
To the update,
good he does good work.
Very good work. And he's very plugged into what's going on in Washington, D.C. Updates on what the latest status of the China tariff pause is. Now, you probably saw the headline that the U.S. and China have agreed to an interim status for these so-called reciprocal tariffs, which have been lowered on the U.S. side all the way from 145% back down to 30%, which is considerably higher than where we started the year, but much lower than I think what the worst case scenarios were when you were looking at investment strategists and so forth on the street. Now, that 30% tariff includes the pre-existing 10% baseline tariff that existed at the beginning of the year, plus the additional 20% tariff that was announced early on until China does whatever the Trump administration is trying to get them to do with regard to the fentanyl crisis. Now, that 30% tariff is still higher than where we started the year, and it could raise prices in the short term, according to Brian Gardner, but less than previously feared. It could also dampen economic activity if left in place. But the more significant development, according to Brian, is the reinstatement of the de minimis exemption. This is a big deal. You might have heard something about this over the last several weeks, that previously there was the ability to allow goods below $800 to escape tariffs imposed in 2018. Earlier this year, President Trump had ended that exemption. It subjected all goods to the new tariffs, and it looks like that reinstatement could help soften the blow. So if you're buying those, the cheap clothing items, I know I have some teenage daughters that may be particularly relieved by the elimination of the de minimis exemption, because there were certain stores online that they like to buy clothes at and things like that, and all of a sudden that was all called into question. It goes to show nobody. I didn't see anybody calling for us getting back to 30% this quickly. That I think took markets positively by surprise. And it just goes to show that this whole trade situation, all these negotiations going on, it's fluid, and it does look like the Trump administration is committed to making material progress as rapidly as possible.
Well, you're not kidding. It shocked me last week, Eric, how much flying around, how much work that President Trump is doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, how does he maintain that? I would be exhausted.
It's exhausting just thinking about it, crossing time zones.
Think about it.
And then he was in Qatar and was like, well, if I got to hop on a plane and get over to Ukraine, I guess if Putin's going to be there, it'll be worth showing up if we can end the war.
I mean, I've never seen anything like that.
Squeeze that into an afternoon.
Yeah, can you imagine that? I mean, for a man his age with that kind of vitality. It's incredible.
Yeah. Colin Roche from Discipline Funds does say that this China deal is actually a big deal. Because remember, just days before the 30% tariff was announced, President Trump had insinuated that 80% seemed right, was the quote. Mm-hmm. So we were off by an order of magnitude there. So Colin Roche has done a bit of an analysis here to say, well, what happens if we maintain these levels? What's that look like for revenues to the federal government? Because remember, a lot of this tariff conversation, it's not just about trade. It's also about helping close the gap on the U.S. budget deficit. We are still higher than the 5 to 10% total tariff rate that Colin Roche had mentioned previously, but 12.6%, which is what Colin Roche is projecting, as well as others are projecting, will be the average tariff rate across all global trade with the United States, is much better than the 25% average that we were at just a few weeks ago. That final rate is important because that's how you can start to project what sort of revenue may be raised as a result of this. Now, just to give you some context here, we came into the year as the United States with a 2.5% effective tariff rate, 2.5%.
That's not much.
It's a big difference.
That is not much.
And it looks like the end goal of the White House administration here may be to basically get that 10% basic tariff in across most partners. So if we assume that's the case, that's where when you include the China side at 30% and you weight all of the trade appropriately, they're projecting about a 12.6% overall baseline tariff as a result of these changes. If you have a 12.6% baseline tariff, that would equate approximate tax revenue of about $380 billion. That's a dent. That's not immaterial in terms of helping shave the deficit. Now, there are some other researchers at the Yale Budget Lab that have that figure closer to 17%. And if it were to be closer to 17% after other deals are negotiated, that would increase tax revenue by about $550 billion. Now, I want to note here, though, and this is I don't see this spoken about very often, at least in the U.S. media. I don't know how it's projected elsewhere, but tariffs are functionally a tax increase. Now, who's paying the tax is a question. Not all of it is safe to assume will be passed on to consumers. But you know, a $380 to $550 billion tax increase on global trade, that is more than a drop in the bucket.
You bet.
Just to, again, context here, we're currently sitting at about a $1.9 trillion annual deficit. So if we could put a dent in that with some of these tariffs, that could help conversations around what's going on with the budget and the sustainability of the U.S. budget. Combine that maybe with some spending cuts, and you could start seeing things come together. Speaking of the deficit, Colin Roche also ran an analysis suggesting that we got a monthly Treasury statement this past Monday, and it was pretty interesting because for the first time in quite a while, the deficit is actually shrinking. In the first full 3 months of President Trump's administration, the deficit is down to $112 billion versus the same, is down $112 billion versus the same period last year. That's due to a 9.7% increase in tax receipts and just a 1.2% increase in spending. So while we do have this tax hike from the tariffs for the next few years, we also have a deficit reduction from a real slowdown in government spending. Those are all good things. Well, I will say that the decrease in the deficit is objectively a good thing over time. But remember, when we were talking about first quarter GDP, at the time we measured first quarter GDP, federal government spending was very modestly down on a year-over-year basis. Very modestly. I mean, I think you could almost say it was flat at that point in time. So the real work of cutting.
Welcome back to On the Money, brought to you by the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel.
This is On the Money. I'm Eric Robert, Director of Investments with the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel. And, you know, one of the most common questions we receive from clients, as well as people who are coming to try and figure out what they're headed into with retirement, is how should I claim Social Security? Now, the quick answer to that is, if you can tell me when you're going to die, I can tell you exactly how to claim Social Security. But most people struggle giving us that information. So the best that we can do is get the most accurate view of where you stand today. That includes making sure that we're getting real estimates for your Social Security benefits, as well as your spouse's, if you're married, because these things play together. And then we will help you understand what your various claiming strategies are at different ages, whether you're trying to claim early, as soon as 62 or even 65, waiting till your full retirement age, or trying to get some of those deferred credits, waiting out till age 70. And it's often not just a straight, it's certainly not the same answer for everybody.
No, it is not at all. It's a different
situation. Answer
pretty much for everybody.
Yeah,
it depends on your age, your spouse's age.
And your other resources. Do you have the resources to delay taking Social Security? What's the tax implications of using those for a period of time? We run all of that as part of our financial plans. And I'd encourage you, don't do a ready, fire, aim approach to claiming Social Security. It breaks my heart whenever we get a call from somebody who informs us they just, I went ahead and filed last month and they never ran the numbers. And then it turns out they may have left a tremendous amount of money on the table. It's not always the same answer even for each spouse,
by the way. It's not. And a lot of people think that it's smart to take it early. If you take it early, you're going to get more, and plus you don't know what's going to happen to Social Security. And I've heard all those things a million times. That's not the way to look at it.
Yeah, some back of the napkin guidance here for you. If you think you're going to live at least to your mid-70s and beyond, it almost is never in your situation, or it is rarely in your interest, rather, to claim Social Security as soon as 62. You take a significant haircut. Sometimes you don't have a choice. You've got to keep the lights on, keep things moving. That's why that option is there. You're often leaving sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of lifetime income on the table whenever you claim early. Also, doesn't mean that you should necessarily wait all the way to your full retirement age or even beyond. That makes a ton of sense for some people, doesn't make sense for everybody, and we'll help you walk through that math. Go to clearpathinvesting.com, and we can help you run a Social Security analysis. One of the things that makes Social Security so critical as a part of most people's retirement plan is the fact that it is a guaranteed income source that grows with a cost of living adjustment tied to inflation. So it's not a generic cost of living adjustment that's a predefined percentage. It is a cost of living adjustment that's tied to whatever our actual CPI numbers have been over the prior year. The Seniors League has released their first prediction for 2026 as far as the cost of living adjustment for Social Security, and they're projecting that the 2026 cost of living adjustment could rise to 2.3% for 2026. Now, this is obviously subject to change. We're not quite halfway through the year yet, and we've got a lot more inflation data yet to come. But the even though the Trump administration, this is from the Senior League report, even though the Trump administration announced sweeping new tariffs on imports on April 2nd and the stock market retreated, these tariffs aren't really impacting so far the cost of living adjustment predictions. The Senior League's model prediction for this month, this is in from April, is 2.3%, which is 0.1 points higher than last month's prediction from March, and 0.2% lower than the prior 2.5% COLA, which is what we saw for 2025. These cost of living adjustments are a big deal for everybody. I mean, whether you're taking Social Security today or you're going to down the road.
Exactly. I mean, think about having a pension and having a pension that adjusts for inflation. You just don't see those anymore. Yeah. There's just not too many floating around. Social Security does, and it's a big deal.
It's a very big deal. We will we'll also revisit some of the tax bill that's currently in the House of Representatives and supposed to be headed back to the Senate before too long, because while no tax on Social Security, turns out that's not quite what's happening, but there is a benefit for seniors that helps kind of make up for that in the bill, and we'll update you on that. Kiplinger had, I thought, a very good article on things that you need to make sure you're aware of before you file for Social Security. This article was titled, Three Signs You're Not Yet Ready to Apply for Social Security, and it was originally published in Kiplinger, also published in USA Today. The first thing that they mention is that, you know, you're really not ready to file for Social Security if you haven't checked your earnings record. Your earnings record, which is available whenever you log into Social Security's website, and that's a process in and of itself. If you've never logged into your own account at Social Security, you need to get that set up. I'd encourage you to do so, because it can take a couple weeks if you haven't done it before. Sometimes they want to send you a postcard or something in the mail that's going to have a PIN number on it to verify your identity. But you need to check that earnings record before you file. It can be inaccurate sometimes.
You better make sure you qualify.
That's very true. You only pay Social Security taxes on the first $176,100 worth of income that you earn in 2025. This is known as the taxable wage base, and it tends to increase over time alongside inflation. It's important to check your earnings record for accuracy before you apply, because errors, while they are rare, but I mean, I've seen them. They've hit my desk before where someone's earnings record wasn't quite right. If that error isn't in your favor, and I personally have never run into one where there was an error in the earnings record that was in the client's favor. Usually it's because they're missing income of some sort. You need to point it out. So you can go to the My Social Security account and access your earnings record, and you kind of want to eyeball year by year what those earnings were. And if you notice something strange, like there was no income reported for a year that you know you worked, you have to submit what's called a Request for Correction of Earnings Record form. You can do that through the Social Security website. You do need to include documentation. So you'll want to have your tax forms for that year or any other documentation you have that substantiates the income that you earn. Don't miss out on it. That would be a travesty.
Could cost you a lot of money.
Second thing you need to do is you need to make sure you understand how your claiming age affects your benefits. We were speaking about this a little bit earlier. Many people just assume that whenever you call yourself retired, you quit working, that is the age at which you should file for Social Security benefits. Often that's not the case. You need to know what your full retirement age is, and that can vary based on your birth year. For most people, your full retirement age is 67. If you were born in 1960 or later, 67 is currently the full retirement age. But if you were born prior to 1960, you could have a full retirement age somewhere between 66 and 67. Now, just as a function of time, most people who have a full retirement age before 67 have already filed. So you're probably in the latter buckets here if you haven't filed yet, and maybe you have a full retirement age of 66 and 10 months or 66 and 8 months or something like that. But you really need to know that because it impacts how much your penalty is for filing early if you haven't yet attained your full retirement age. It also impacts the upward potential for those deferred credits. If you wait past your full retirement age and delay receiving Social Security, they will increase your Social Security benefit by 8% simple interest per year, or 2/3 of 1 percentage point per month. May not sound like much, but that's 8% that gets added to your baseline benefit that then grows with the cost of living adjustment tied to inflation for the rest of your life. So if you...
It sounds so easy, Eric.
Yeah, it's just that simple. So one of the things that we do with these Social Security analyses is we will calculate your break-even ages for both you and your spouse for whatever ages you're filing. Yeah,
and that is awesome. Yeah. That is an eye-opener for anybody that does it.
Yeah, it'll tell you if you wait, for instance, to your full retirement age, as opposed to claiming as soon as you can, your break-even age might be somewhere in your early 70s, meaning you need to live to age 72 before you are getting more
coated with RhinoShield and not have to worry about it again for 25 years.
Take it from Terry. Give RhinoShield a call now for a free evaluation. 877-25-RHINO. 877-25-RHINO, or visit 877-25-RHINO.com.
There have been neighbors that have come by and said, did you just have your house painted? Because they wanted to know who the contractor was. And I said, no, it's actually RhinoShield.
877-25-RHINO.com.
Mizzou football is here to stay. After an undefeated home season and a second straight 10-win year, the Tigers are looking for more in 2025.
Eli and the boys have done it again.
With a top 10 transfer portal class and a strong home schedule highlighted by Kansas, Alabama, South Carolina, and Texas A&M, you don't want to miss out. Get your spot in line by joining the season ticket waitlist at mutigers.com/FBwaitlist. M-I-Z.
Welcome back to On the Money, brought to you by the ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel.
This is Eric Roberts. I'm with ClearPath Wealth Management Group at Stifel, as is Bob Stockdale here in the studio with me. And listen, if you watched the last 60 days unfold in your portfolio, you were pulling out your hair, didn't know what to do. I hope you didn't make any mistakes along the way. But you know, when markets get volatile, it's often the time that people realize, boy, I wish I had someone to give me some good advice here. If that described you at any point over the last 60 days, you need to give us a call. Go to clearpathinvesting.com. Call us at 636-695-2650. We are very flexible in helping you manage your investments in a way that's not just appropriate for you, but that you're comfortable with. I mean, some people prefer to own individual companies and they like to know exactly what they own in terms of the stocks. Some people want to avoid all of that, don't want to own any individual companies, stick more to funds and diversified portfolios, things like that. But all of it has risk, and it's important that you understand when times are good, which I would say we're in those times right now. We've come full circle recently. We're back to good times in the market. If your portfolio gave you a shock and you were concerned that maybe you had more risk in that portfolio you were comfortable with, it could happen again. It could happen again this year. We don't know what's yet to come, but there are smart moves you can make, and now's a much better time to be considering those things than when you're in the depths of a correction. Go to clearpathinvesting.com. We'll be glad to help you with that if you need a portfolio review. Bob, the IRS made an update this year. It's not often that we get an attaboy out to the Internal Revenue Service, but they addressed an issue.
This is a good one.
Yeah, they've addressed an issue on a tax form, what's called 1099-R. The 1099-R is a tax form that you receive when you take a distribution from a qualified retirement account, like an IRA or 401k, other qualified plan. And one of the issues with the 1099-R was that if you were someone who made what's called a qualified charitable distribution, previously, those qualified charitable distributions did not show up on your 1099-R, or at least they weren't marked explicitly as has a qualified charitable distribution. So you had to make sure, working with your tax advisor, that you had all the documentation appropriate and that your tax filing was appropriate to recognize that this distribution that came out of your IRA, if it went directly to a qualified charity and you were eligible to make the distribution under the rules, that it wouldn't wind up counting as taxable income. There's some rules there that we have to discuss. The important update that the IRS made is now, beginning for the 2025 tax year, 1099-Rs will explicitly call out qualified charitable distributions and the amount that was sent out for a qualified charitable distribution. Now, importantly, that's just what the form is going to say. Your tax filing still has to do the work of making sure everything else is in line. So, for instance, your 1099-R is not making a judgment as to whether you were actually eligible to make a qualified charitable distribution. And a qualified charitable distribution is where you take a distribution out of a traditional IRA or 401k, some sort of pre-tax retirement account, and you send it directly to a charity. And if it's a qualified charitable distribution, it doesn't count as taxable income for you that year. It can also help you satisfy your required minimum distribution if you're at an age where you have to take those. You are not eligible to make a qualified charitable distribution until you are age 70 and a half or older. And that qualified charitable distribution does have to go directly to the institution. Now, or at least the check has to be made out directly to them. It can go to you if you want to personally deliver it, but it can't go to your checking account first and then to the charity. That breaks what makes it a qualified charitable distribution. Well, now 1099-Rs will have a new code or set of codes to label a qualified charitable distribution. There will be a code 7 if it's a non-inherited normal IRA, code 4 for an inherited death distribution IRA, and code K is for qualified charitable distributions of a traditional IRA asset not having a readily available fair market value, whether or not it's from a non-inherited or inherited IRA. That's kind of getting in the weeds that we're not going to discuss here on the show.
A little deep, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a great idea, though.
It
really is.
I mean,
a lot of people use this, and it's good for charities. It's good for the people that are shelling the money out. It's really a great idea. And they fixed it. They fixed a problem. I love it.
Yeah, it's nice to see something getting fixed out of the IRS as opposed to a new thing that's going to make it more complicated. So that's a nice solid for those of you out there who are at that age, over 70 and a half, especially if you're making required minimum distributions out of your traditional IRA. If you don't need that money and you're trying to lower your tax bill, well, you don't have to pay the taxes. All you have to do is not take the money. You have to send it to somebody else.
There is a catch.
You still don't get the money if you send it off to the charity. Unfortunately, this week I was really excited about talking about the new trend in auto loans. We're going to have to save that for next week, but I'll give you a little hint. I mean, what's the longest car loan you've ever had, Bob?
3 years.
5-11-20. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on 97.1 FM Talk.
About your house, 314-436-7900 finds me right here. Phone lines are again this hour wide open for everybody and carrying on after the Cardinals start. If you want to stick with the home improvement, jump over to 97.1 and follow me there. We can finish out the rest of the hour on there. All your home improvement needs. Again, give me a shout, 314-436-7900. And this is, it's spring coming into summer, and deck season, I'd like to call it, I was actually out on my deck just this morning, had my grandson there. We're babysitting him a little bit, or now I should say my lovely wife is babysitting him now while I'm here, hopefully helping all of you. But we're out on the deck blowing some bubbles. He's wandering around and I'm looking at the deck, and it's kind of next on my list as I come around power washing the house. I'm at the front porch now. I got half the front, half the rail, got another section of rail and everything out there to do before I come around and get to the back where the deck is. And man, I've got some wood on my rails, and boy, do I really need to power wash and reseal and stain the rails, the top rails, all the post, everything. And so I do have a composite deck floor, so I don't have to do the actual floor, but there's a lot of wood skirt, wood all around the deck on the outside, and wood top rails and posts and everything. So a lot of work yet to do there. So as summer approaches and we think about what should homeowners be looking for or thinking about when checking out a deck or when just thinking in general about building a deck, there's a list of things you want to kind of know and watch out for. One, especially building a deck, is permitting, or if you have a deck, finding out if there was permits obtained to have that deck built. As you go around and inspect the deck, you want to definitely watch out for the flashing. The improper or missing flashing is a big deal. Does your siding run behind the deck board that's mounted to the house? That's a big key indicator of not flash properly, not necessarily the best way that it could be. So, and that kind of falls into that improper attachment to the structure of the house, incorrect fasteners, looking for rotting deck materials, improper materials. The joist hangers, the metal fasteners, and the nails are one of the biggest things to really watch out for. I've inspected a lot of decks in my day, and I find things like the deck looks like it's built really well, pretty properly, and you've got 2x10 floor joists, and then you go to look at the joist hanger, and the joist hanger is rated for a 2x6 or a 2x8, and it's really small. The wrong nails. I've seen them use roofing nails in the joist hangers, and they are not able to hold that kind of weight and that kind of structure. So really getting through that and making sure that's right when you get to the stairs, open risers, missing railings, all of that is a big thing too. So you want to watch out for all of those things when you're kind of inspecting that deck and trying to see if it's safe for the new season and what kind of work do you got to do to it. But, hey, we got David on the line, so let's jump to the phone real quick here and see if we can help him out and get through you here. David, are you there?
Yes. We have a property management company, not in the St. Louis area, but we have worked with a lot of storm damage, major hail storms the last few years, and we've had tornado issues. And one of my chief maintenance people, he's always checked with anybody that approaches us wanting to do work. He said you talk about the magnetic signs. He always says, walk around behind the truck and see where the license plate's from.
Yeah, exactly. That's a key thing. Yep, it says Texas, and you're in St. Louis.
Yep, and the other thing is, before we let anybody do work for us, we got good local contractors that we've worked with, and that we would recommend like you guys do. But
yeah,
what we also do is we verify if it's somebody we haven't used before. We verify their company by checking, like in our area, if you're a roofing company, you have to have a physical office to get business license, and then you have to have the business license in order to be able to get a building permit.
Yep.
And we'll see these companies come in, and they'll rent some small office space. If you look at that and see if they're, you know, if you can Google their name and they're at that space for a period of time, or if they just rented it and then they disappear. And like you said, we had one client who we took over management of 6 houses, and she had used a company that vanished, and we had to do work on 4 of the 6, you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
in a couple of years. So you definitely want to make sure they're legit companies. The other thing we always also want to make sure is get copies of the warranties on like what brand of shingles things like that, because if the company happens to be out of business or not available down the road, determining what brand of shingles those are, and, you know, if they happen to become a defective shingle, and, you know, getting any kind of warranty done if that company's not around can be difficult too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's good general practice. Protect yourself, understand who you're working with and all of that. And that's some, I appreciate that. That's some great things to think about and some great steps. And yeah, check the license plate. I really definitely like that one. And yeah, keep the information, get the information. All any information you can have from what's being done is awesome to have and good to hang on right. to. For later, if you need anything, for sure.
It is, because you never know, 3 or 4 years out, you know, you've got a shingle with a anywhere from a 15 to a 25 year warranty. And, you know, I mean, you guys may know because you do it every day, but sometimes just looking at that shingle and knowing if it's a Tamco or a Malarkey or whatever brand, and knowing who to call is pretty difficult sometimes for the average person.
Yeah.
And you know, and guttering's another issue that'll come up a lot with roofing, especially with hail damage and things like that. And you want to make sure your guttering is done right, because we've had people install guttering and didn't get enough downspouts, you know, and then
didn't get it right in the first time. That's all big deal. Hey, I got a hard break here for Cardinals baseball. David, love the comments, appreciate the call, love all the insights we can think about of how to make sure you're getting the right people and you're doing it properly. So plenty more to come for everybody. 314-436-7900. Welcome back. Home Improvement Show here for you. Rich Orris here for you today. Anything you need out, about, around, inside, outside. What's happening with your home? Are you thinking about a big renovation? Do you have some thoughts or questions about how to get started? What kind of materials are good? Anything going on? A lot of storm conversations. I'm loving those so far. And if you have more tips, thoughts, insights about that, I'd love to hear that too. We've had a lot come in from a couple different phone calls about checking and where to check and what to look for. And I love the last one with the license plate, walk around the vehicle, just really pay attention, I think is kind of the note there. So I'm here for you, whatever you need. 314-436-7900, direct line right to me right here today. We'll get whatever you need answered for you right now. And we've got plenty. We've been going over, and I've talked a lot in the past about the case net and looking up, have people been sued? Have they had all this history? And I've told the story a couple of times, which actually involved my friends at B&W Concrete, because I was looking up about a company for a client that was kind of gave me some information and said, we'd like to see your insights on how Mosby Building Arts really differs from this company, and basically came back to them with the case net and said, hey, I looked up on case net the name of the person running the company, and he was being sued by our concrete company. And so I had called them to ask them about what happened and the person, and the first comment Larry said to me from B&W, when I even mentioned the name, he said, oh gosh, please, please tell me you're not doing any work with this person. And so my client was like, wow, you know, all I did was look up Better Business Bureau and saw they'd been in business for like 10 years, saw they had an A+ rating at the Better Business Bureau, but I didn't notice that they're being sued by every contractor in St. Louis because they don't pay their bills and they don't pay the second half, or they don't, and they have all these issues. And that's what we're talking about trying to watch out for and keep your eyes open for is really, it's good to do some checking, do some digging, and make sure what you're getting. And talking like David was mentioning on the last phone call about people that they use and looking into them and making sure that they're good and using the same people for years, like Mosby Building Arts does. We have here at Mosby, we just actually made a sheet. We've been making all these different sheets for ourselves, for our clients, for our trade partners, for all the people that we work with. And they're basically what to expect kind of list of things. And we have developed in the past year, we made a what to expect for trade partners that we literally give to the trade partners. And if we have them come on site and maybe it's someone that is new to their company, or we can give them this sheet and say, hey, read through this real quick, because it will help explain what we expect from you, what you can expect from us, and how to get through this so that we know we help each other. We do the best thing. And we do this with all sorts of levels. And so the walkthroughs that I was talking about that I did last week with my projects, and I come out on site and I bring the project manager and they get a what to expect sheet of like, When we show up and the project manager goes over this sheet with them, here's what you can expect. And there's topics, hours of work, parking, trash, dust, all the different things. What can happen? What can't? And isn't it great? Isn't everything in your life better when you know what to expect? That's the question there. So having a good understanding, that's just a great thing no matter what you're doing. Why is this not done more often? Why is it not done more often in building or remodeling? You just don't know what to expect. And that's one of the biggest complaints we hear out there is they didn't know what to expect and they didn't get what they expected because their expectations may have been too high or the company's expectations may have been too low. Who knows? But just in getting to a clear understanding, then everyone knows what to expect and you can actually, you have a guideline for what to go off of. So we know, you know, if we let you down, because you're like, hey, it's in the sheet. You said you were going to do this. Why didn't you do it? And so it just makes it clear for everybody. And it sets expectations for us that this is what we need to perform. And why do we need to perform that? Because we went over it with them and read the whole sheet and explained this is what you should expect. So we better perform it. And that's just the biggest thing in getting through projects like this. So much of it is understanding and communication. So when we thinking about your decks and building new decks and say you're at a point where you're like, yep, I think we're at that point. We want to replace our deck and to think about the next steps and what should happen and what should you be thinking about? Do you need a design process? Are you replacing it exactly? And then maybe you don't, you just need to know the selections and what's going to look good and what to pick, or are you changing it up enough that you need some sort of design to understand what it is? And sometimes we need to do that professional services with you because we need to figure out, is this thing going to have 4 piers, 8 piers, 12 piers? How does it get built? What's the size? How far? It all needs to be kind of engineered and designed and figured out of what can happen. And then there's other parts and pieces that could fall into a designing or professional services package that's kind of says, what can we do with decks? What type of features and lighting and seating and pergolas, fire pits, fireplaces. We've done full-on chimney fireplaces off the back or the side of a deck. gain some privacy, get you a feature, you can hang a TV on it. Is there a roof or not? Is there there's so much that can happen. Sometimes you fall into that, figure this out for me because I really need to know everything that's going on and happening with it. What's the layout? What's the orientation? How do we figure all that out? Now, if you're doing a simple replacement, your deck is this big, you're replacing it the same way, still think about that process. Think about understanding. It's good to consider everything and to still get to those expectations. So I'm not only explaining to clients when I look at your deck and we're talking about replacing a deck, I'm kind of going through and I'm explaining, okay, this is how we're going to attach it to the house and this is how we're going to flash it so we can guarantee it's not going to leak here. And this is going to be a long lasting good project for you. Not only is that conversation had, it's put into a scope. It's put into a scope of work that literally lists all that out. We're going to remove the deck. We're going to take everything off. We're going to remove the siding above and below the deck or in the area of the deck. A lot of decks are put on top of siding, and that is not the best way to get lasting value out of how you build a deck. So when I put in the scope of work, I'm going to take off the siding. I'm going to attach this to the house. Before I attach to the house, I'm going to put some sticky, gluey, nasty ice and water shield stuff, and I'm going to plant this on your house so that it helps keep water out, so that when you bolt it to the house and you put these bolts through it, it's kind of sealing up around the threads and everything from behind it and diverting the water away from it. So now I put my flashing on top of that board. I put house wrap coming down on top of that to make the water coming from the light fixture or around the door above go where I need it to go and keep it out of the house. That extra layer of protection back there is the greatest thing to have, and it barely ever sees water in our deck system. So then siding, everything goes back on after deck boards are on and buttons up to everything, and we know where water is going. Do you see all that, or do you just have somebody that says, yep, we're going to tear down, we're going to rebuild a deck the same size, and here's the materials. They picked the TimberTech Rockwood color, and they picked this Westbury rail, and that's what we're going to use, and that's all the information you know. And then 2, 3, 4 years down the road, I'm at your house looking at this leaky deck into your basement going, yeah, they put the boards right on top of the siding. They attached it in not a way we would have. And I got to take this all apart and redo a bunch of it to stop this leak from coming in your house. That is a real live thing that happens. I've got one right now that I'm getting ready to fix, that someone else built the deck. And now we got to take it back apart, reflash it, and try and correct water from coming inside the house. So setting those expectations, understanding all of that in a deck project, I talk to a lot of homeowners. They think this is a simple thing. It's just a deck. Why is this? This shouldn't be that hard. But it connects to the house. And anything that connects to your wall has a penetration where water can come in. They're just there, and that needs to be managed. So are the people doing that, managing that? If you ask someone, well, are you going to flash the deck properly? Are you going to put some flash? They're going to say yes. No matter how they're doing it, they're going to say yes. They're going, oh, absolutely. And, well, the siding will keep the water out, or this will happen, or that will happen. And they're going to say what they need to, because it's what they know, and they're just trying to get through and appease that this is how we do it, and everything's usually always fine, and have a good day. My deck is going to be fine, and then you find out later it's not. And that's kind of the same with the roofs and the storm chasers and all the things that can happen out there with everybody that's trying to warn you and prevent you from getting into a lot of this. So take heed on all of your projects with everybody, but get those expectations out in the open and understand them and be able to read them on a piece of paper that you sign is a great, great thing for all the homeowners in every community, not just the St. Louis, greater St. Louis area where I'm kind of reaching out here. It's for everyone. I wish I could get this across the whole country. So, hey, we got plenty of time left for you. We got a couple more segments coming up. Anything you need from me, 314-436-7900. Get you right into me. We're going to take our middle hour break. And coming up next, we'll have plenty more for you. Don't touch that dial. We'll be back. All right, everybody, we're back. Plenty more Home Improvement Show. I'm Rich Orris here for you today. Again, remember, you can find me 314-436-7900. You got a question about your home? You got anything going on remodeling-wise? Maybe you've seen something from the storm damage. You're kind of wondering about, a question about, something weird with the home. Don't hesitate to call in. We can help you with all sorts of remodeling projects, any kind of issues that you may have going on that arise. Again, 314-436-7900. Get you right here to me today. And we have spoken a lot today, and we've got quite a few calls back to one from Norm about asking about the storm damage and should people be worried about our storm chasers around or what's going on now that all this just happened in St. Louis. Joe had some really great thoughts on calling the Missouri Secretary of State, getting into their system and finding out if people are registered, if their businesses are registered, are they an LLC or not, and Missouri CaseNet to find out, are there any lawsuits on the company, on the people, on the owner. You can find all this information out. Of course, David had some good insights on running a property management company and working with different contractors and making sure that you get copies of the warranties. And his thought, too, was with the phone numbers and getting phone lines from the areas to check the license plate, just take a look at the vehicle that they're in. There's so much like that. And if you want to find out anything more about me, about your host, Rich Orris, here today, you can also go to callmosby.com and you can find out about our shows, about me, what we do. You can see different projects that we do. We do everything inside and out. You can see our summer sale that we just kicked off. That includes some decks and a lot of outside stuff too. So you can find out a lot of information there about myself and about Mosby. And also kind of going over those decks, we were talking about inspecting decks and what should you do. So I'm about to work on mine pretty shortly here and thinking about inspecting your deck to make sure it's okay. Well, this is where I wouldn't say don't call a professional. It could be a really great idea to call a professional and just say, I'm concerned, I'm wondering, and I just want to know what am I up against and what's going on and what is the current condition of my deck. Because I've looked at some where they thought, they've literally told me like, oh, we've looked at it before and this and that, and I know my deck's in really good shape. And then I get underneath it and I'm going, I can see like four things not right now. So the eyes of a professional can be much different in knowing more of what needs to happen in today's world and how we frame them, where should we attach them and not attach them. There's actually spots on the house where you don't want to attach the deck directly to the house. So there's reasons for that. So there's a lot of information out there that a professional can actually help get to you so you understand more. And that might get you to go, yeah, maybe we really do need to work on this deck. I just didn't realize it. So, but hey, we've got Gavin on the line here. Let's get to Gavin. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, perfect. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
I've just seen the news, like the engineered decking material. They have one that's coming out that's called Stone Deck Systems.
Okay.
Or experience with it.
So I don't have any experience with that. It must be pretty new. I do not recognize the name. Is it actual stone of some sort, or is it like a composite decking?
It's a composite decking, but they say it has ground stone in the material. So, I mean, I've used the engineered stuff before, and it's okay, but... You know, I'm curious if it would hold up better, but I don't know. Do you have one of the engineered ones that you've had experience with that holds up better than another?
So, yes, definitely. And it's not necessarily just the engineered, but it's more for me and the experience that I've had the most, that what I like the most is the PVC type decking, like the AZAC, where it's PVC wrapped and it's kind of PVC in the middle, so it's not necessarily composite. There's some composites that have a PVC coating around them, and those would be better. Those are kind of like the middle of the line.
Okay.
But the full PVC, like an AZAC board, is really the best type of deck board out there. There's another newer one out there that's pretty much the same as that it can pretty much almost...
Where do you get that stuff at?
It can sit right on the ground. So it really, it's not going to be at the big box stores because they're doing like a price thing. So you got to find like... You either got to look it up online or you got to find like decking material suppliers that you can actually get that stuff through. So, but it is definitely a better PVC product. I like that the best. It's kind of like composite is good, won't necessarily rot, but has a little more maintenance. You get the composite with the PVC coated. That's better, kind of middle line. And then you get the actual PVC with the PVC coating around.
Is it still 12-inch centers?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And when you get the stairs, it may be even sometimes less on stairs on some of them. Sometimes the stairs are like 8 inches, like between the stringers. So, looking up each manufacturer's type of how install and all that, they can be slightly different. A lot of the stairs are at 10. Some of them now are going to 8 on the stairs.
Okay.
So
they're like clips that attach, or are they screwed in?
It can be both ways. So they make them to where it could be it could be screwed through the board just like a regular deck board, or they have a toe screw system where you screw in at an angle and there's a tool that kind of guides you so you don't see the screw, or there's the clips where you get the groove and you use the clips and you screw straight down. And there's another deck board with the clips where they have a decking system that's kind of like these plastic squares, and you can lay them right on the ground. They've literally put just like a rock base, laid these squares on the ground, and you kind of stake them to the ground, and those deck boards just snap right into these squares with those grooves in the edge of the deck board. And it's sitting right on the ground, kind of like a paved patio deck floor sitting right on the ground. You got to make sure you got the right product and that it can be that close to the ground. But there's a newer deck board out there, a PVC type that I've drawn a blank on the name right now, but it's can basically sit on the ground.
And not a lot of prep?
Yes, just basically you just flat surface. I mean, they show it going right on top of dirt on their video.
Yeah, put a barrier down so there's grass growing between.
Yeah, I'd put down like some rock and a ground cloth type of barrier, and just they could set these squares right on top of it and get a size that'll do a border around, and then you snap these deck boards in, and it's sitting on the ground just like paved patio.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard of that. Yeah. I just remember when they came out and just using them and the engineered stuff, but I've also run in a look at a house or so that where they will put them on 16-inch centers, of course, and they're dipping in between.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of them still say like 16's okay in the field on the actual deck floor, but you're better off with 12 to keep it flat and straight with these thinner deck boards for sure. My deck, I have the actual composite. And kind of explain for people, composite has wood pieces inside of it. So it still can, it has a little more maintenance. Mine needs to be power washed pretty much every year. It attracts the mold and the kind of the mildew stuff from the shade, and it sticks to it a lot easier. So I'm power washing more often, and that's what everybody thinks maintenance free, but there's some kind of cleaning, maintenance, something going on to all of these decks. The PVC would be the easiest to power wash off and get that stuff off. It'll still get on there, just not quite as bad as the actual composite.
Okay. Yeah, last time I did my other deck was front part of my house that was covered. I just did the composite, and then I did back of mine. I did those new pressurized treated cedar tone boards, and then I used the invisible fasteners.
Yeah.
Which I like, because I was just hoping that I could try that out and maybe they'd last longer if they don't have screws on top.
Yeah.
They wouldn't rot out from the top. So, and it holds it up a little bit. You've seen those invisible, those like clear clips that you screw them from down below using regular wood boards.
Yeah.
It's just a lot more labor intensive, but they do work well.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. I'm going to try and look up the name on that one. Maybe in the next segment, if I can find it, I'll put the name of that deck product out there that can basically pretty much sit on the ground. I've got a project where we're putting in for permitting, getting ready to start here in a month or so, where we're using this stuff. And it really seems like a crazy great product that it, most of them don't warranty that close to the ground, and this one does. So that's what we really liked about the product and using that product. So I'll try and get that out in the last segment for you, Gavin, and for everybody out there. So we're going to jump into our final break here of the show of this hour. If you need something in the next segment, 314-436-7900. We'll get you in real quick, and, plenty more to come. I'll look up that deck, see if I can find the name of that while we're in the break. All right, we're back. Final segment. Got a lot to fit in here in about 5 minutes, but I did want to put real quick. So the product I was talking about for the decking is Moisture Shield, and they have a Moisture Shield Insta Deck, and that's the black kind of plastic squares that you stake down to the ground. And then they have the Moisture Shield Composite Enhanced PVC Decking that has a really great warranty for that system and everything that can be very, very close to the ground. But, hey, we're going to get to Tim here. Tim's on the line. Let's see what's going on with Tim real quick. Let's see if we get through this. Tim, what's happening?
Hey, I got a wooden deck that I reseal about every 2 years. Can I name the product that I use, or no?
Sure.
It's called Ready Seal.
Okay.
I believe they're out of Tennessee. But anyways, my question is, the railings hold up the 6x6 posts. They hold up with the stain year after year. But the deck itself, the horizontal part of the deck, I've got to do that religiously every 2 years. Now, my question to you is there a product that I can use instead of stripping it down? Normally what I do is I power wash it, but man, when I do that, you're going back, you're really damaging the wood, I think.
Yeah, you got to try to not grind into it too deep. Yeah.
Right. So is there a better product out there that would prep a wood deck better than power washing? For the reapplication of this Ready Seal product?
Oh man. See, there's
it's a 20 by 20 deck.
Yeah. They're not really that I know of. I'm sure their products come out almost on the daily. There's so many hundreds of thousands of different products. There's no way to keep up with all of them. So I'm sure there's probably something, but I don't know if it would be better or not. I just keep my power washing when I do mine. I was just talking about I'm getting ready to do that, and I basically stay back, and you're just doing like a wash. You don't really want to grind into it. You don't – all of that, because you can definitely splinter and kind of really damage the wood, but – it is good to kind of roughen that surface and so that the stain will take on that a little bit better. But most of any of those stains, they only last a couple years, like you're saying. I just use a typical bare stuff, and I just plan to put it on every 2 years is basically what I do. And I just know that I got to do it, and it's not my favorite thing, you know? I dread it.
You got to pick the right time of day, and the knee pads always come in handy. But getting back to the power washing, I did use a product from Pittsburgh Paint years ago that was almost like an acid wash for the deck. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it. And, man, that really cleaned up. Because prior to that, the reason I used that, it was a four-year stint since I had done the deck. So,
oh, wow, okay, yeah.
There's a lot of algae buildup and whatnot. But anyways, when I put that Pittsburgh paint product down, man, it really stripped back what I needed to get to put this Ready Seal down. And now it's been 6 years, two-year cycle that I do this deck. But I'm wondering if there's anything that I can put on top of the Ready Seal after it's done to maybe waterproof to some extent the deck, the seal.
Yeah, not really, because you're competing. Okay. You're competing with different products, and you want to make sure whatever the Ready Seal is, if you put something different, it's the same type of product, just so it'll work. Right. So there's the hard thing is with wood, there's no magic coating, there's no magic cure. It's a shame. But it just has to be done, and it's just a pain. Wet and Forget has a lot of cleaning products. They may have something for the deck before you reseal. They might, because they got a lot of different products out there. But hey, I'm totally out of time, Tim.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. For everybody else out there, hey, be good. Be good to each other. Be good to your homes. Hopefully we get through these storms, and I'll look forward to talking to everybody next week.